smartly, we hired a young person to manage our social media.
Do you actually have to pay somebody to do this?
We do, and it's completely worth it.
Why? How do you know?
You know, I avoided Facebook for a long time, mostly because the first time I got on there, I spent like 3 hours looking for people that I never really wanted to talk to anymore. And so I tried to avoid it, but I do realize that it's the way young people communicate now. And it's also, as much as I hate Yelp, you know, and Yelp.
You have to address the Yelp question.
I use it a lot when I'm traveling.
You use it? but you also hate it too as a restaurateur.
I do. I do like a lot of the peer-to-peer programs that have come out in the last couple of years, that Chef's Feed would be one of them, where it's more chefs and peers.
And therefore more reliable and more...
It's not open to everyone. And, you know, people don't take out their bad experience on the restaurant.
Hugh, I want your take on Yelp and social media.
Well, I mean, social media it's very important to engage. For me, anybody who wants to ask a question. I mean, if you're into social media and are on Instagram and are on Twitter or on Facebook, you have to, in our positions, we have to respond. That's why if you go in to play that medium, you have to play in that medium. You can't just ignore it. So, but it's different, my stuff usually, because mine's from a very personal aspect. So it can get political, it can get interesting, it'll get crass, it'll have like jokes, but that's not the restaurant side. Though I'm the diplomat of the restaurant, the restaurants have their own feeds that are, you know, pictures of food and people sitting and eating. Mine are more like jokes about
it. But you do it because you like it. I mean, it sounds like you like to do it, you like to engage with.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hire anybody to do it. I don't do Facebook because I don't like cats all that much. But I do Instagram and I do Twitter. But they're really easy ways to engage with people. And sometimes things crop up, like somebody will tweet at me that they're at the restaurant and it's taking a little while for them to get something. I mean, but then I can really quickly adapt to that and figure it out.
Are you like always checking your Twitter feed? Pretty regular.
Not when I'm asleep.
That's good.
I mean, yeah, I mean, again, it's like if you're engaged in that, you have to be engaged. I mean, this is we live in an ADD world. And people want stuff now, or they lose you, and you lose them. So I just think response time has to be really fast. It doesn't do anybody any good to respond 8 hours later to a question on Twitter.
Right.
It doesn't matter at that point.
How about Facebook?
Somebody who manages, well, again, I have a robot who manages it.
And what are your thoughts on Yelp? I hear chefs everywhere just bitching and complaining about Yelp and random reviews.
Look, there is a kernel of truth to every good and bad review on Yelp. I don't care how idiotic the person may be, how crass they can be in writing it, there's a kernel of truth. If you skim over it and read it as being abuse and insulting and rude, it probably is, but there's something in there that they weren't greeted well at the host stand, that the food was salty. There's some little kernel of truth to it, so your job, or my job, is to figure that out, distill it down to really what it is. It's just the way
you do use it. You'll look at those and evaluate.
If I want to get really wasted in front of my computer late at night with tears flowing out of my body, that's where I go, because that's what it's for. So I think the amount of anger and hostility from some people who write Yelp reviews, and we all have sometimes a bad experience at our lawyer's office or a doctor's office. We don't get up and, you know, write a 5-page review of them, giving them 1 star about how they ruined our entire lives. You know, it's food. So I think that we have to have a discourse amongst the people, the Yelpers, and us as restaurants to tone it down just a little bit. At the end of the day, you have to realize, and everybody who ever posts a Yelp review has to realize, that oftentimes that's a person who's worked 90 hours a week, who makes very little money, who tries really, really hard, and maybe they just didn't nail it that time. Food is a very shape-shifting idea to nail with consistency every time. So you ask a lot of restaurants to be amazing places. But it also, when you walk into a restaurant, it's your mood that dictates the meal you're going to have. If you walk in, the worst table we will ever get is a two-year-old, a couple with them who's right there, the parents, and they're not getting along, and then the mother of one of the couple. So three generations, it ain't fucking going to go well. And nothing's going to go right. And you should just stay at home. But it's hard to tell them that. So, and that's not always. It can be successful. But
Christine, tell us about social media, how the good and the bad for you, your business, and your work.
We use social media for a variety of things. Having multiple milk bars that have more or less the same menu in multiple locations, we often use social media to leverage new and exciting things that are coming on the menu or coming off the menu. We use it as a way to communicate with our customers when we're opening or when we're closing, which sounds crazy, but when you change something at a bakery to run a successful bakery in the first place, you need to fold yourself into people's daily lives. You have to sell a lot of cookies to pay the rent on one location, let alone seven. So somewhat different than a restaurant, our customers, we need and want them to come back with some sort of frequency, maybe more often than you would expect a customer at your restaurant. And so we use social media to communicate that sort of stuff with our customers, because if you're coming in on a somewhat regular basis, if something changes in that routine, you want to know. And if you don't know, you feel like you're angry, you're upset, you feel alienated. So we use social media a lot to connect with our customers, and that's really helpful. We, because we have multiple stores, we are a community, and people feel more connected to us through social media, because I can't be at every store, much like Hugh can't be at all of his restaurants, or Steven can't be at all of his restaurants, and so that it makes them feel more connected. We try and sort of make them feel like they're being let in beyond the counter that you order your stuff from. And then we use it too as a soundboard for feedback and comments. If someone's mad that something's coming off the menu, or doesn't like something new that's coming on the menu, or like you said, even through Yelp, I look at Yelp often. I don't look at it once a week, but especially when we're opening a new store or if sales at a store aren't performing well, I'll go there and look and say, what could we be doing better? And with every rave review, I'm sure we still could have done something better. And with every angry review, there's truth somewhere in it, and if you're too emotional in reading those things, then you're closing yourself off from the reality of you're always going to be somewhere in between.
You're saying we a lot, so is that you're not doing it?
I do more of the trolling, but we have a team of people that run social media as well. It's usually two or three people, just because one person on some level gets burnt out, constantly creating content and constantly creating a voice, where I sort of think about Milk Bar as a community, so we need more than one voice to really shape what Milk Bar is.
But all of you guys must look at Yelp, and if there's consistent criticism throughout, you must address that. The random outline, this place sucks, doesn't mean a lot.
No, but it's good to know, no matter how much someone might love you, it's healthy to know that other people are really upset about something that you're doing. And I think controversy is a good thing, because if you have someone that hates what you're doing, chances are you have a bunch of other people that would die for whatever it is that you're doing. Living in between is not... No. Then you're kind of just average.
I don't think any chef lives in between. You're just not going to make it in between. Johnny, you've been 10 years at Jean Georges, yeah, one of the great restaurants in New York City and the country.
So when social media came around, I joined up to everything, but I didn't use it a lot actively as someone who would post a lot, but I used it more like a voyeur. I would watch what everybody else was doing. It was way for me, because if I'm working 6 days a week, 16 hours a day, these restaurants, I don't have time to go out to eat. I don't have time to see where the chefs are doing everything else. So it was the only way for me to really follow my friends all around the world and see what's going on, what new techniques, or what flavor comes, whatever it is, or what's going on. So for me, it was more about happenings. But when I left the restaurant, that's when it flipped. That's when I realized, I have to have more of a presence because I'm not going to have a bricks and mortar where people could come and see what I'm doing. You know, no one's going to be coming and taking pictures of my food anymore and putting it out there for me. So it means it's up to me now to stay relevant in the world and to keep people engaged with me. So at the time, I was on a couple shows. I was on Top Chef at the time, and I realized the importance of social media. So I joined up with a company called Husay. And Husay, what Husay allows me is, like, I don't have anybody to help me do anything. Like, I've never had a publicist. I've never had PR and like that. So I've organically built my numbers. I think I'm around 420,000 followers now across my different mediums. But I do it in a way that I go out all through Husay. Well, Husay allows me to hit Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, all this stuff in one shot. And then I go back to each one individually, and that's how I respond and engage. So I'm not able to just post in one direction. So now I had a meeting this past week with Facebook and Twitter, and they both yelled at me and told me I do everything wrong. And they said they don't understand how I've grown my numbers the way I have. But because now there's all these amazing new new like mini apps that are available to people like us, who you can do a Q&A, you can do an immediate like poll within a post, you can do, you know, all these live broadcasts now. So there's all these new apps that you can only do when you are working solely in that app. And so now I'm learning more and more, but it's so important to engage, you know, to not only to keep people up on what you're doing, your appearances. You know, we all do the food festival tour, you know, so we're all over the country always doing these food festivals. So it's important to let people know, hey, I'm going to be, you know, in a different city. So these are people that normally wouldn't get to see you otherwise, whether you're a chef at a restaurant or a TV person, whatever it is. And so it's a people away from people to come and engage with you, like you guys. It's like, we weren't here, you know, how else would you say hi? Like we talked the other night, right, during dinner while I was plating desserts and feeding you with my spoon, right? Yeah, girl. So, you know, it's a fun way for us, the only way for us to really engage such a broader audience, you know? Like, when I worked at these restaurants, Joan, George, and Danielle, they're four-star restaurants. It's the 1% really that get to go there. And if they go, they go maybe once a year. So we don't have the regulars that Milk Bar would have. So the only way for me to really touch a lot of people is to be very active. And the same thing with our books, you know, constantly, it's a tool to, you know, you release a book and there's a big wave and then all of a sudden it dies down hard, so it's a way to stay engaged. Like, so now it's holiday season, so I'm sure Christine's doing the same thing, posting our holiday recipes, getting people excited, what are you baking now, this and that. So to constantly ask people questions, get responses, is a way to keep them interested in what we are, who we're you know, what we're doing. So for me, it's a huge tool in my everyday. But it's a huge responsibility. Like, it takes so much of my time to do it. You know, and then you have your haters, you know, and I have to, it sucks, but I'm a super emotional and sensitive person, so I hate reading, like, you know, the show aired the other day, and it's like, oh, you're ugly, you should have a bag on your head, and, you know, and you know, I hope, you know, there's all
these... Someone actually say that.
Oh, my God, you should... I take screen snaps of all, I have a folder of haters, like, I'll show you, it's brutal. So, like, oh, yeah, like... You don't even know. I think most of them are ex-girlfriends, though, but... Like, there's a time, like, I have a seamless thing I'm doing now where there's all these buses around New York City with my face on them, right? And someone said, oh, I saw your bus, I wish it would run you over, you know? Like, shit like that. People, brutal. I think it was actually Hugh, I tracked the IP address.
But it sounds like, by and large, it's a really positive thing, this new media.
I would say it's also, just from Johnny's point, it's not just a tool for everyone else. I think it's a great tool in the community where if before I was at Milk Bar, I want to know everything that Johnny's doing. He is like the pastry chef of pastry chefs. And if I can't go to Danielle or I can't go to Jean-Georges and see what he's doing, he's the best pastry chef in the country. And I want to know, as a cook that's coming up, like, what's he doing, what's on his menu, what's inspiring about what he's doing. No, but it's true. And I think that's the other part of social media, where we're not just puppeting for everyone else. It's been an incredible tool beyond, like, I remember before social media, you just waited for Wednesday morning and you ran to get like the food section of the Times to see like who was being covered and what was out there. And it's cool that that information is at your fingertips without having to dig too much, and that you can control what information you get by choosing who you follow and who you engage with.
Hugh, what are the negative aspects of the internet, and also where do you see it going? Where's it going to go? It's because it's changing rapidly and all the time. So what are the worst parts about it for you?
I think it just, unfortunately, it just breeds a little bit of shallowness. It's kind of snapshots. It's very, you know, everyone gets to choose what they post, right? So immediately it's kind of like showing the best side of your face. And so, I don't know, sometimes it doesn't really give a complete picture of what's going on. It's snapshots, it's easily digestible stuff, at least from the restaurant standpoint. There's some feeds that are really interesting and really good, but there's some feeds that restaurants just put out like 6 pictures of plates and soups and shit like that each day, where I'm like, that's not showing me really anything.
Do you think it's important for a restaurant to have a sort of an animated presence, a real live person?
I think there needs to be sincerity in it. I think it doesn't need to be like, come eat dinner with us, you know, it's like, whatever, and then who cares, or, I don't know. And then, but there's so many ways of posting that too, that it's become very complex, the number of choices we have. So I choose to be sort of a modern Luddite, if that's not redundant, and use very basic ways of cross-posting, just Instagram and Twitter, and Facebook, I just let Rod, and whatever.
Yeah, I've never taken Facebook. I still don't understand Facebook. Twitter I like.
Yeah, I didn't really like the people I went to high school with, so I have no interest in them tracking me down at this point, so...
Steven, are you active at all yourself, or are you just working in the kitchen? You seem like a cook's cook, and you're back in the kitchen.
I'm way more behind the scenes. I definitely let Donald, or Donald is more of a presence, and my business partner, Donald Lang, is more of the celebrity side of it, and I spend a lot of time cooking.
You spend a lot of time cooking? Imagine that.
Now it's P&L,
but there is something else. About Stephen being cook's cook. You guys realize that Donald won a beard award. His business partner, Stephen, won a beard award. Their other business partner, Brian, won a beard award. I mean, it's just this amazing. But that's because...
They won another one for best new restaurant.
Yeah, Pesh, in
2014.
So, it's an amazing, amazing grouping of chefs, but they're chefs. These guys cook. They could really care less about social media.
Chef, as opposed to what?
Me.
No, you're a chef.
We compare everything to Johnny, you know? Bam.
Christina, where do you see things going as far as social media goes in the Yelp? Where would you like to see it head? And would you like to see more of like consolidation? Part of my frustration is there's just, as you said, there's so many ways. I mean, I have a Who Say thing, and I don't even understand what it is.
Who Say is great, though.
Is it? I mean, there's just so many.
Yeah, I kind of get the sense that there will continue to be a larger variety before it consolidates down. I think that everyone has a different preference in terms of the venue of social media that they engage in most and why. I personally love Instagram. I'm terrible at posting on it, but I love it because I'm just a visual person. I like looking at that picture. I read emails all day long, and I am not great at consolidating my thought down into however many characters it is, but there's something about Instagram that's just visual and is, I don't know, for some reason feeds me. I like looking at pictures that people are posting. I'm terrible at deciding what to post for myself, and so oftentimes that I just don't post anything. But I think that there's going to be a greater variety before it slims down, though it sure would be nice if there was just one. And there was some sort of rule of engagement of, hey, put your feedback in there, but don't be so severe. Remember that everyone can read everything that you post, and what you post is... in large part, the only representation of how people see and think about you or your business.
Stephen, you mentioned something that was that I wasn't familiar with, chef, or more chef driven. Is it an app?
It's an app.
What's it called?
ChefSpeed.
You guys know this? You all know this? I don't know this.
It's more of
describe
a.
Describe it. It's more of chef. A. You have to be a chef to join?
No, it's. It's more along the Urban Spoon, which I also enjoyed the lottery aspect of the Urban Spoon thing, where it was you push the button and it would pick a cuisine and a price range and recommend restaurants to you. But Chef's Feed is just curated.
It's curated.
They interviewed chefs, and the chefs recommend restaurants in the city that And then it has the near me feature and the, you know, it, but it works very well because you have a more trusted base that they're pulling from. And everyone recommends, you know, all their favorite juices, beans, and the restaurants that...
And this is something that just chefs participated in because they want valid information out there?
The guys that run it were very convincing early on. Got some good people involved, and it was easy to follow suit and participate. Mm-hmm. But it's designed really to drive people to, you know, different styles of restaurants. That's usually where I want to go with it, is someplace that's not necessarily Danielle's, but locating that Greasy Spoon is different now in the internet age. Everybody wants to go to that restaurant. Yeah, everyone's on the travel search for, you know, the best local whatever, but it's just a well-curated app. App that leads you to those places.
How about go ahead.
I'll tell you another huge benefit for me with social media is I travel a ton, you know, where we're shooting stuff or events, whatever else. So I utilize social media in a way like, hey, and I always do it a couple days before I get there. Hey, I'm going to be in Barcelona. Where should I eat? And I get amazing feedback from locals, from people that are there, from followers who've been there. And I've been compiling lists, so in my Dropbox, I have cities from all over the world, just tons of restaurant recommendations that I'm always getting to, and I kind of vet them out as I get there. You know, chefs are always really good about trading, like, hey, you know, where have you been, where have you gone? So for me, social media has been great for that aspect. And something else that's come around the last couple of years, if you guys are aware of Chef Steps, the guys over in Seattle, they're amazing. So Chef Steps, they're the ones that did the modernist cuisine. They left, they started their own company in the fish market there.
Is that Maxine?
Max, no, it's Chris Young. Chris Young and those guys. So, and Grant. So what it is they're putting out, it's a free site, tons of technique. It's all technique driven. From easy as how do you poach an egg or how do you think, but it's all these mini video snips. It's you can join for free. And it's probably the most incredible thing because they're loading so much content on the web for free. And then they do offer specialized classes and memberships, but I mean, all in all, I think it's one of the greatest things to hit the food world in a long time. I'm a huge proponent of you guys. And I mean, if you haven't gone on Chef Steps yet, it's a free to join. You could watch like, anything from how do you make a proper latte, or how do you poach fish, or how do you sous vide, or how do you perfectly sear something. Like, start to, like, no special materials required, you know, no special equipment required kind of site. Just how do you become a better cook and more comfortable at home? And then you do it in these short little video snips. And the way they have it organized, you know, it's both in, you know, and everything's in weight, you know, so I like how they're pushing people towards working in brands and working by weight. I think that's the future. We need to get away from those archaic medieval cups and measuring spoons and stuff like that. I have a t-shirt that says measuring cups are for sandcastles. I had made a couple years, like, I fucking hate those things. You know, like, I refuse to even have them in their kitchen most of the time. Like. But all in all, I think resources like Chef Steps and stuff, they're just going to make the general public more aware of how to cook, how to be better cooks, how to, you know, source better ingredients. And there's all these positive things. It's like same thing like food TV. Is food TV good for us? It's good for us in a way that, you know, maybe we're learning about ingredients through Top Chef or whatever else, or combinations, and seeing things that we wouldn't normally see. And there's always a downside to TV, as it dulls us. You know, the statistics is over 80% of people that watch food TV don't actually cook. They watch it for entertainment value, which blows my mind all the time.
You have an interesting project that you're working on, and it speaks to something that John is talking about. Something that's very important to me is getting people to cook. Talk about your home hack project and the broader aspects of cooking and being alive.
Yeah. One of my daughters, who's Beatrice, is 13 now. She was 11. She came home from taking a home ec class at school, and I was like, what'd you make? I was pretty excited. And she was like, red velvet cupcakes out of an instant box. And then we pulled croissants out of a tube and wrapped them in a Hormel bacon and baked them in the oven. And then we learned how to take prenatal vitamins. I was like, it's not an ethical thing, but I was like, a vitamin is, you turn it around, it's often called one a day. It's an easy concept to sort of get into the vitamin disease. So I was like, so I called the school district. I was complaining as a parent. And a friend of mine's the head of the school district. He was like, I know, I was going to cancel the whole thing. But he was like, why don't you write a new curriculum? And I was like, that sounds great. I want another full-time job. Because this 90-hour work week, there's tons of free time.
So we did, and that's what we're doing. So with the backing of Newman's Own and Google and a number of other great, generous people, we have a staff now, and it's called Seed Life Skills. And it's basically 9 components of retainable life skills. So everybody in America in grade 6 learns how to poach a perfect egg, learns how to make a vinaigrette that's based on a ratio, and understands food that much better, and knows how to read a cell phone contract, and understands what they're clicking when they say, I understand this on the internet, because you don't. Even all of you don't. So it's just retainable life skills. So kids get to be 20, and they have an option. And the option is, I need to feed my family now, I need to feed my kids, because you're 20, and the average American probably has 2 kids at that point. And they know how to poach an egg and make a salad and make, roast a chicken and inexpensive, simple stuff. It's to take this sort of mask away from food that it's only made by people like us. Okay, food needs to be made by everybody. And to me, you want as many merit badges in life as you can get. And I want every kid, regardless of color, economic status, whatever it is, to know how to poach an egg and feed themselves. So that's the it.
Why is that important?
Why is it important? Because we've gone hook, line, and sinker down a really bad food path in the last 50 years under the guise of convenience. And so we've lost, we used to say things like, I used to make jam with my grandmother. But we don't say I used to make jam with my mother, because my mother drank whiskey and gave us Smuckers. We're not that close. So, but we just didn't, like, there was a whole generational shift of we didn't cook at home. And so now we've left this legacy of no skills, no skill sets. So we're losing food ways at a really, really, really rapid pace. And the only way we get back to that is by proving to a kid that you can sustain yourself, and proving to an adult who's a parent the best time you're ever going to have with your family and your kids is cooking with them in the kitchen and teaching them stuff that they can actually learn.
Christina, what do you think about the importance of people cooking their own food?
I think it's huge. Funnily enough, my mother would not let my sister I take a home ec course because she thought it was a waste of our time, because she said, I'm teaching you everything you need to know. She's also an accountant, so she taught us all of the other really important life skills, like how to balance your checkbook and not just depend on the bank doing it for you. But she almost, funnily enough, looked at a course like that and said, like, absolutely not. You're going to take another course that will teach you more, and I'm going to fill you with all of these other important life values. So for me, it doesn't even strike me as something that is not a possibility. It's just always been the standard. And I think it's hugely important. As much as I like to play off of nostalgia and ingredients that you find at the grocery store, the reason that I do that is because I went to the grocery store with my mom every week, and that was my upbringing, like going grocery shopping and cooking meals and having snacks in between, but finding that balance and never taking the routine of going to do your own shopping for fresh ingredients and for snacks. That is...
Oh, you were born in 1982?
81.
81. So you were going to the grocery store in the 90s, yeah. After our food system has kind of rapidly changed, and you get shiitake mushrooms and cilantro.
I grew up in Virginia, so definitely our grocery stores did not have those kind of ingredients, but that was, for me, one of the most exciting parts of going to culinary school and moving to New York and really starting to fall in love with food, because I knew the food that was in my grocery store, and I love creating with it. But then the world opening up into all of these amazing new flavors that were deeper and brighter and sharper than what I came to know was one thing that really sort of inspired me to want to become a chef.
Stephen, you're in the business of cooking for other people. And if everyone cooked for themselves, you wouldn't have any business. How important is it to you that your kids, do you have 2 kids?
I do.
Do they cook, and how important is it for us to cook our food?
It's very important. We were talking about earlier the idea of writing a book. You know, those people have written wonderful books, but and I've avoided it. But there's something very important to me about having the time to be at home for supper whenever possible. My wife is a really good cook. My mother was a great cook. She was a very rigid, typical cook. She, she said 1 teaspoon of salt. That was what it got, and she didn't deviate from that. But she did instill in me the importance of having that time with your family. That happens when you do cook a meal at home. You do sit down, you relax, you decompress, you get to talk about what happened during your day. And it's been interesting as a restaurateur figuring out how to do that. We have a lot of 5:30 dinners or 9:30 dinners where I race home, we eat, and then I split. But it has really, I think, helped to create a very dynamic family life. That
your kids cook?
They do. My younger daughter has a very short attention span when it comes to cooking, but my older daughter is very talented.
Well, I don't think everybody should cook. I mean, if everybody wanted to cook, it could be trouble. But somebody in the family has to how to cook. We're talking about new media. How about the old media, such as cookbooks? You mentioned that you didn't have one, but are considering it. All of you guys, we've all done multiple cookbooks. How important are they? Do we need more of them? Why do we do them? Do they matter? Johnny.
I don't know. I think Rick says, as a chef, you do your first cookbook mostly out of vain. You want to put your stamp on the world. You've got something to prove a little bit. And for me, my first book was during my tenure at Jean George. So I wanted to stamp those four plays out. And we separated ourselves from a lot of restaurants by how advanced and complex we were and what we were doing, but how simplified and nostalgic at the same time. So always giving people a point of reference. So I could give you peanut butter and jelly, but in a form that you've never had it before, but it was still relatable because everybody understands what peanut butter and jelly is. So that was kind of my thing, where we'd flip it, we'd give you something maybe you would understand as far as texture, but then combination would be completely new. But as long as there's a point of reference, people would always enjoy something. I think when you get too strange is when you get lost. So for me, I just wanted to do that book because I was really proud of what we were doing there. We were pushing really hard and working hard, and people were really receptive to what we were doing. So, and it was kind of people kept coming saying, you should do a book, and after a while you're all right, I'm gonna do a book, It was great, it was a great tool. It's still, it's still in print, and it came out in 2008. So the fact that they're still printing them is great. And the newest book, Sugar Rush, was probably the first book I should have done, because it's really the book that, it's a building block book. It's a book based on principles and foundations and technique. What is a custard? What is a meringue? What are the three types of meringue? What do you use each meringue for? And really go through all the stages to give people who, I didn't learn how to cook from my mother. My mom was a horrible cook, Both my parents worked, so we were the ultimate Iron Chef chop kids. Me and my brothers, we would come out, we'd have a bar of unsweetened chocolate, a can of tuna fish, and a Swanson TV dinner. Okay, do it. Let's see what we can do. We would bang it out. You put out some amazing stuff back then. Some horrible stuff too. But that's how I grew up. I grew up between a cornfield and a sheep farm in the Catskills. And we were a poor family and didn't have all that. Half Italian, half French. But the little time I got to spend with my grandma trying to learn how to cook, all her recipes were this much flour, this much this. I don't have a single recipe passed down from generations. But the books, I think, are tools for people who are like me, who didn't learn anything. So I learned a lot from books. So as a young cook, I watched The Frugal Gourmet or Julia Child, The Great Chef series, and that's all that was on TV. But I started collecting books and started reading and learning about ingredients that growing up where I grew up, I had never even heard of, and then to see how they work with other ingredients. So I started building an encyclopedia in my head about flavors or techniques and wanting to try things as I grew as a chef. And so for me, it was a tool. And then I started just collecting books. I don't think I've actually read a book in years, but I like pretty pictures.
Hugh, I'd love to hear your thoughts on cookbooks. Are they really useful? Do we need all the cookbooks that we have? Why do you do cookbooks? Why do they matter to you? You always look bewildered after I finish the question.
Yeah, I don't know. There are so many awesome cookbooks out there. There are so many still being published. It just gets to be a little insane as to the number. I mean, I'm not so vain as to say that mine matter. They don't. I mean, I've got three of them, and the world could live without them. I don't know.
Why did you do them?
Boredom. No, I wanted to document something with the first book, which is sort of my time in the South and the importance of Southern food and the fact that I'm Canadian and cook it. But, you know, it's not the most important book on Southern food. That's probably written by Edna Lewis. You know, and so my newest one is about cooking from a CSA box and utilizing stuff at the farmer's market and all that. You know, I mean...
But that's a useful subject because a lot of people ask on social media, I know at least, I've got all this, I don't know, kohlrabi.
Right.
What do we do with all this kohlrabi?
Yeah.
Well, that goes into the decision whether or not to do a book.
Yeah, it does. I don't think I'd do any more. I probably won't do 26 like you. That's unreal. They take a lot of work. That's a thing.
I know.
Yeah, but I will say for all of the cookbooks that are out there, I grew up in Virginia. I didn't know what I wanted. I wasn't sure what I was passionate about. I didn't have access to a lot of stuff. The internet wasn't really big yet. So I suppose maybe this conversation is interesting as it interjects with the subject of social media and the internet. But cookbooks were what... The French Laundry cookbook was like the book that I couldn't afford to buy but would go to the bookstore and... Or I couldn't justify buying, but I'd go to the bookstore and like thumb through the pages and read them. Because that was the access that I had, and that was what inspired me to want to be not Thomas Keller, but to be my own chef. And I know many other cooks that don't have the kind of money to afford culinary school, but and haven't made the decision to go in and start like getting their chops at a restaurant, but are inspired and want to learn more and want to discover what other chefs' stories are, what their perspectives are, and what their technique and their philosophy is on any given subject, any given ingredient. I learned how to bake through recipes, and I learned how to bake through cookbooks, and without them, I would have no clue that I loved to do it or that I wanted to make it a profession. And I think recipes are meant to be shared. They're not these secrets that should be kept only in your kitchen. And I think that's the importance of cookbooks, but to Hugh's hilarious points, or he won't give himself enough credit, there are other really important cookbooks that have existed before his, but he has a really strong voice that really does bring a lot of enthusiasm and validity to the food that he's cooking and that's being cooked and influences Southern cuisine in general. Are there too many cookbooks? Does the world need more cookbooks? I think the world could certainly always use more good cookbooks. Not every cookbook is a great cookbook, but the theory of just no more cookbooks means that we just stop learning. It means like the validity of food and perspective and recipes and technique just stops, and I don't think it'd be where it is today without it.
I'd like to open up to questions, but I do want to add that my book, Charcuterie, I think is the most stolen cookbook in America. We're very proud of that. Are there any questions? We have a lot of great chefs here, so any questions?
Just to continue with this, I have a question. So
there's so much content available on the internet. Is that impacting the sales of your cookbooks?
Very good question. I don't know if it's measurable, but what do you guys think?
I don't know if it is measurable. Cookbooks still sell because, I don't know if you've ever tried to follow a recipe while cooking on an iPad. It's just really difficult. You've got oil on your finger or whatever it is. Books still are tactile. And I think people, it's the one, I still enjoy reading hardcover books as well, but most people are on their Kindles and readers and stuff like that now. But I think cookbooks are, it's important to have the actual one there. So they do still sell, and I think that, I mean, we still get contracts to write them, so...
Also, they're vetted. I mean, when you go to allrecipes.com, because you're looking for a marinade for a flank steak, you don't know what you're getting, and who's doing it, and...
The stars are coming from.
But
to your point, the other problem that you see on the internet is someone goes to Michael's charcuterie book and then starts their own food blog and steals recipes and maybe changes one little thing and calls it their own. And there is a validity to, if you're buying a cookbook by someone that knows what they're doing and you're following the recipe, you're guaranteed something that you're not guaranteed with content on the internet, which is not often vetted. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's.
Which if you go to compostcookieswithks.com, you should buy my compost cookies.
I want to add versions with the crack cookies with a K.
There you go.
Good question. Yeah.
I would love to know your feedback in terms of the blogging world, because bloggers come to your restaurants and you present the food and it's wonderful and it's hot and it's fresh and it's ready to eat, and then all the phones come out and food isn't eaten right away. So just what is your perspective on that?
Yeah, the question is blogs, and they've evolved since they started. So what do you know, what's their impact on your businesses, and what do you think about blogging in general?
I mean, I think it's a good medium, and some of the blogs are great, and they're amazingly well done and really informative and really interesting. And there's a lot of bad blogs out there, too, but, you know, I don't care about the food photography. I prefer not a ton of flashes and stuff in the restaurant. It's a little invasive, but, you know, we operate moderate fine dining restaurants, not super fancy places, so it's fine, whatever. But there are some really, really important bloggers out there. There's really important perspectives to look at. You know, there are still, we have to deal with this email a lot, which is, I'm a blogger and I'm going to come in and could you count my meal? We don't do that for a journalist. I'm definitely not doing it for that guy down the street who's a blogger. I don't really care. So, does that make sense? It's just like, we're not paying to play. So,
Stephen, do you get that? Do you get bloggers saying?
We do. And like you, we deal with it more like a regular journalist situation. There are a lot of blogs that are enjoyable to read.
And that's it.
I think the good bloggers.
Well said, brother. Well said. Well said, brother.
I think the good bloggers are the ones that respect, that are the most respectful of what they're doing. If you're coming to give a real life experience about your meal, you gotta respect the fact that the food is being served because it's meant to be eaten immediately. I mean, there are so many different parameters of it, but if, as a blogger, your biggest intention is to get the most beautiful photo, then guess what? You're not experiencing your meal the way that you're trying to report on it. And so I think when priorities shift, that's the hardest part. When bloggers' priority becomes, I want the article that's the most read, it probably also means that you're gonna want to hate something the most, because what people really want to read is a scathing review about a restaurant that comes with really high regard. And I think that really good bloggers are the ones that really respect what they're there for and don't have their own personal mission going into it.
That's about photography though. Like I'm guilty of this. Like I always have my phone out, and like when I go to nice meals, like, I have a really horrible memory, probably from all the ecstasy I used to do in the dance clubs, but I take pictures of all these great meals, but then I love to post them, because I love to give all these other chefs so much press. I mean, people watch us to see where we eat. I think they enjoy it, like, especially if you use social media tool, like, not just your restaurant, but, like, I show myself up in the Catskills all the time, whether I'm on my dirt bikes or chopping wood or where I eat or farms, and people, and we have a tool, we have analytics, and we can see what people respond to, and more often than not, people respond to my personal life way more than my professional life. Because they want insight, like, what a normal guy, we're all normal people who have normal lives outside of what we do professionally. And I think it's important to share that.
I wouldn't exactly call you normal, though.
Fair enough, Chef.
We have time for a couple more questions, yes.
So just to speak to the, the photography point, these bloggers, right, it's almost important to them to get the best photo. Right, because that's their livelihood, and the better photo that they get, the more engagement they'll receive. In turn, the more business your restaurant or whatever they're there photographing will get, probably, right? So it's this weird balance of the best photo and them experiencing the food. I'm sure you guys get the blogger email or the Instagram influencer email, and it's, I have X amount of followers. Where do you draw the line, right? Who deserves to have, you know, an extra app sent to them or a cocktail or whatever it is, and who should go, you know, as a normal customer, despite their following?
We tend to keep it just across the board. nothing.
Okay.
I think if you're a repeat customer, and it doesn't matter whether you're what it is that you're doing and why you're there, if you're a repeat customer at any of the Momo Fukus, that's when we would treat you like we would treat our aunt or our uncle or our mom or our dad, and we want to send you a little something extra. Mm-hmm. If it's about wanting to get the best photo and then the food is slightly compromised, I'd say it's just like judging on a show, or you're not eating something being like, it was a little cold. You know that the food was sitting out and that you were taking a photo, and then you form your decision.
I would think it's funny when people pull out these full frame cameras and stand up and like do these overview shots. Like, you know, we'd always peek into the restaurant, like in the dining room, JG, or whatever else, and see these people with these monster cameras, you know, and every course they would stand up and try to like and like walk around their own table. That's ridiculous. You know, if you want to take a shot for your own memory or whatever else, I think if you're a blogger and you want to shoot photography, you should go experience the meal as it is, and then if there's a dish or two that you want to see, call the restaurant and say, I'd love to shoot this dish again. Would you mind I come in so I get a proper dish? I think that's the right way to do it. It's not always feasible in a lot of things, but I think if you want to get a great picture after you had an amazing experience, then contact the restaurant. Like, I'd love to shoot this dish again. Can I come in? And most chefs at the church come in at the beginning of service, whatever else, and they probably let you shoot it again.
That's a great suggestion. That really is. Never heard of that. You know, that's a real responsible way to do it. We have time for one more question.
You were talking about people taking your content from your books. Do you do anything in regards to that?
There's not a lot you can do. Most people are kind enough and say, do you mind if I use your recipe? And I say, as long as it's credited, as long as you give proper credit, I don't mind, because I want to share, I do this to share information. And people are going to buy the books anyway. People like cold cookbooks, so I don't feel like they're not going to buy the book just because I have my duck confit recipe. So it doesn't bother me. I imagine it's the same for you guys.
That's a good recipe, by the way. That one.
All right, we have time for one more question. You have a question.
You guys talked about milk. You guys spoke about milk a lot as something you guys looked at for reviews. Just want to know your perception on Zomato. They just bought Urban Spoon, so I was wondering if they had any place in competing against Yelp or anything like that. That's a very good one. Zomato. This is the biggest urban site that like all Asian countries use. They just bought Urban Spoon.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many sites doing reviews stuff. I heard about that transaction. I haven't really followed Urban Spoon stuff that much. The most interesting thing right now is there's a lot of lawsuits going on between TripAdvisor, Yelp, and Yelp suing Google for pushing down results on searches. So what pops up first on your phone is the map with the Google reviews, and TripAdvisor is like on the second page now. And Google's saying, oops, we didn't mean to do that, but the theory of TripAdvisor is that they did mean to do that, which I don't care, actually, like Google reviews better, but push it down.
You guys have been really terrific. I want to thank the chefs. I really admire these guys because I think food is more fundamental to our humanity than just about anything else, and these guys are promoting it and teaching others to do it. So a round of applause for the work of these guys.
Thank you.